This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm glad everybody is back as we're going to be getting out of the month of May very soon. We're going to be entering the month of June, which means we have a lot of NBA Finals talk soon to talk about. We're in the midst of the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. We have a lot of off-season news, obviously, to tackle. That's what we're going to be talking about in this episode. I am your co-host, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
We always have something to talk about. Even in there's two games going on, that's it. No, we still find stuff.
Yeah, we'll find stuff that don't even involve basketball. Just very, very, very random things, you know. But I think in this one we have a particular subject where we actually have a copious amount of subjects that we can tackle, you know.
Yeah, it's been a crazy season and a lot of people on short leashes all of a sudden with this new money.
When you say short leashes with the new money, you mean with the with the player contracts that they can bring in, how many egos they have to, cuddle?
With everything, it's just all we need to win now. Philly's the only one that seems to be building. Everybody else, nope. No time to develop, no time to do anything. It's now.
We're not gonna be talking too much about Philly, but obviously the 76ers won the NBA lottery. Is Sam Hinkie in any way kind of vindicated?
No. This is... It doesn't... A, there's no guarantee they have the next LeBron James whoever they pick, and B, you don't throw away three seasons to get a number one pick 3 years later.
Yeah. And the thing about the lottery is always when they have the sympathetic character, it's always kind of like the dead... Like, it's no offense, but it's like when the Washington Wizards had A. Poland's widow, I believe. And then the other one was when they had who's the owner for the I'm blanking already.
Oh, Dan Gilbert's son.
Dan Gilbert's son, and when he was stepping in, you were like, oh, they won the lottery because they want them to have that moment, you know. But there was no dead giveaways this year. It was all just kind of basic representatives, except for Willie Cauley-Stein for the Kings, who looked incredibly disinterested. He was just like, oh, hi. You know?
Well, they all look disinterested because it's just like, well, I have to sit out here. There's nothing I do. I just wait to show up on camera.
I thought Brett Brown looked legitimately thrilled. And he even mentioned our best friend, Joel Embiid. It's going to be fascinating with the Sixers. We'll talk about that at another time. But yeah, the Philadelphia Sixers, congratulations, I guess, to them for winning the NBA draft lottery. Lakers are two. Number three is your Boston Celtics, which they took from the Nets pick, and on downward. So we'll talk about that as we get to it. I just wanted to tackle that for a second. But let's go ahead and move on. And now, even with the conference finals, nothing too fascinating, huh?
We were having some good games, some bad games, a little bit of...
The Cavs-Raptors games have been really bad. All of them.
As expected.
Mm-hmm. Just the whole flow of the games have been just really shitty. You know, the Raptors won game three, but it just seemed like there's just a lot of disjointed effort there. You know, their usage rate, we always talk about, is very, very high. They don't really assist the ball well. They rely so much on those star players. You know, Biombo had a huge game. You know, the Cavaliers finally had an off night. You know, and then the Warriors and the Thunder, two top scoring offenses in the league, obviously having shootouts.
Yeah, and that's just, it's great for video games, but it's just, those games are like, well, I don't really need to watch the first three quarters because I know they're all going to score 40 points in the end, you know, the final.
Absolutely. But let's go ahead and get to our main topic here for the NBA Team Podcast, and that's going to be about the coaching moves of the NBA, which actually have kind of reverberated all the way back from, I believe, in November, you know, with the Houston Rockets. You know, they were the one who dropped the first axe with Kevin McHale.
Yeah, and then, you know, we almost, we're very close to having half the league changing coaches in a year, which is
by the time we reconvene about all this, it'll be 12 moves, unless there's a really surprising one, like say for example Brett Brown in Philadelphia, Dwayne Casey in Toronto ?
That would be the only shocker, but at this point, that would be the stupidest thing, because who's left to really get that'll change? You know, everybody's already been picked in.
Yeah,
you know,
Hoiberg's in hot water, but I don't think they're going to fire him immediately. Here's the truth, and I feel like that's with the same way with the Rockets job. I don't think anyone wants the Bulls job because of management. I don't think they want to deal with that.
Well, the management and the media is just a really thankless job, and mm-hmm. you know, the fact that Thibodeau got as far as he did, and you know, as long as he did with just, you know, it's not the best culture up there.
Yeah, and Alvin Gentry, there were murmurs because we weren't sure if Dell Demps was going to keep his job. I don't know if you heard the story, but Tom Benson went to the Kentucky Derby because he had two horses in the race. And the rumor was that they were waiting until the Kentucky Derby was over for our senile owner to figure out what he wanted to do. But when he came back from the Kentucky Derby, Dell Demps wasn't fired, which means that they didn't do a house cleaning in New Orleans. So Gentry's going to stay with the Pelicans. I'll say this for Dwayne Casey in Toronto. If they had lost that seventh game against the Pacers, I think he would have been fired.
Probably, but
it would have been close.
But it would have been close, but again, you had so many turnovers. Unless you had somebody in mind, mm-hmm. if you're just like, well, let's interview, let's see the field, let's maybe get an assistant, let's get a retread. I think, again, the ship had sailed because they are a little too good to mm-hmm. be, you know.
Yeah, and we already talked about Hornacek being a coach that was hired last summer, Alvin Gentry, too. The other ones include Michael Malone, who's at Denver, Billy Donovan, who's at Oklahoma City, still alive, obviously, in the playoffs, and, you know, a couple other names before that who may have been hired in previous years who, you know, even though they haven't been around for a long time, you know, they had a lot of coaching hires in 2013 that have stuck around, like Brad Stevens in Boston, Doc Rivers, and with the LA Clippers, it just kind of shows this. Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta, it just shows the kind of like how precarious these situations can be. You think these coaches would be around forever, but they're not.
And you know, there are good teams and playoff teams that are. It's usually okay. The bottom five. Okay, you guys are definitely gone. Nope, not anymore. Brett Brown. He's one of the longest tenured coaches at this point.
Now remember though, he was the last coach hired in the summer of 2013, I believe. I think it was like August. They waited all the way until August to hire him because they weren't sure if they wanted to pick him or somebody else, you know, and they had already, and Budenholzer was on the staff for San Antonio. He was already gone. He went to Atlanta. So they just went with Brett Brown, who was like the next key assistant on that team.
And it really, you know, it sort of shows how there's really been no development of anybody on that team. You know, yeah, you could say it's been a revolving door, but still, you know.
Do you like, and we'll talk about some of the, we can just go ahead and wrap up some of the other ones that haven't been moved. Like, do you like Stan Van Gundy in Detroit? There's Jason Kidd in Milwaukee after he had that spat with Brooklyn, and Quinn Snyder in, Utah, and obviously Steve Kerr in Golden State. Which one do you like most? Which one do you think has the potential to really do something? I mean, Kerr, we could even exempt Kerr.
He's, you know, again, if Luke Walton could go, 30-something and 0, and, mm-hmm. you know, that team is just on autopilot. I'm still going to go with Stan Van Gundy because he's, you know, all his personnel moves are super questionable, but he has willed that young team into the playoffs with his players. And
I always say this, even with the sweep against Cleveland, you just need the experience. The experience is what does it for you. You know, we'll be talking about one coach in a second, Frank Vogel. But remember, Jim O'Brien, and you know Jim O'Brien well from the Celtics days, he had been the coach for a while with the Indiana Pacers, and they were underachieving after Rick Carlisle got ousted by Larry Bird. Did you hear about Bird's comment that coaches can only last about 3 years?
Yeah.
A little strange. That was a strange one. But O'Brien got the axe. Vogel took over in 2011. And they got into the playoffs, and they lost in five games to the Bulls. But the games were close. And I felt like that was just a great thing for the Pacers, and it really benefited them going forward, because the following season they did better, the season after that they did better, and then the season after that they did better, and it just, I just think that it really helped it. It created a culture, and I feel like Stan Van Gundy has sort of, I think the hard part is almost over with Detroit.
Well, now it's just developing this young and making sure they're still stay hungry and, you know, money doesn't get in the way and egos don't get in the way. Because that seems like a very unselfish team to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go to the timeline. We did these, we're not doing these rankings based on, like, best to worst yet. We'll do that at the end. There's a couple of teams that have not yet to make a decision. We'll discuss that at the end as well. We have some candidates that we've heard reports about, some interesting and some that just make your fucking head want to explode. But we're just going to do this based on timeline, based on a final decision with settling on their new head coach. You know, some of these timelines obviously are going to overlap because some coaches were ousted and they had interim coaches and then they later brought in the new coach, you know, so some of these decisions are a little bit off. But I'll go ahead and start with this one, even though they had two firings before this one. One was by the Rockets that we talked about with Kevin McHale, and the other was the Nets firing Lionel Hollins in January. But on January 22nd, after a miserable blowout loss on Martin Luther King Day against the Golden State Warriors, the Cavaliers fired David Blatt. Now, obviously because the Cavaliers were a one seed, they had the best record in the Eastern Conference all the way through. Everybody was very highly skeptical of David Blatt's dismissal. They felt like LeBron was sort of the mechanism behind the whole thing. Tyronn Lue was not only put in as a coach, he was announced as the new head coach going forward with a new contract. Were you surprised by that, and do you think it sort of worked out for them?
Yes, I'm very surprised. Aren't you supposed to interview people? Isn't it supposed to be not, here's your next coach?
I think the interview went like this. LeBron went to Tyronn Lue, says, hey, I want you to be my coach. You want to be my coach? And Tyronn Lue says, sure. And LeBron said, okay, David Grant, make it happen.
Is it just the NFL with the Rooney Rule, where you actually have to, you know, have a fake, you know, minority? But it's just, that just seems so, like, not shady, but just, you know, oh, well, we fired him. Oh, here's a new coach. Yeah, this is just LeBron's team. There's nothing, you know, I've said it before many times, but there's nothing, you know, he's really done to, I'm gonna have my different style. They're the same team.
But we've seen this a lot with assistants that get sort of inserted, installed, where, you know, you could tell that the ownership kind of likes this guy just in case it falls apart. We saw that with Mike Woodson in New York when Mike D'Antoni was there. And you kind of knew, okay, Mike D'Antoni gets fired and Mike Woodson's probably going to take his place. It felt like that with Tyronn Lue. He was like a key assistant with Doc Rivers for a number of years. You know, in Boston, he went with him to the L.A. Clippers along with Kevin Eastman, and I'm totally blanking out on another name that went with Doc Rivers to from Boston to LA, but he had, you know, been a big part of it too. And they brought in Alvin Gentry, but then Alvin Gentry went to Golden State and blah blah blah. But Tyronn Lue had some success already as an assistant coach. He was a standout assistant coach when he was put into that staff, you know, from out of nowhere. Did you feel like that was sort of the first step in the process? That they already had in the back of their mind that they might do this?
Oh, yeah. If you do that and you have no real other change going forward, it's just, you know, you're bending to the whims of your team.
Mm-hmm. And so the next one that I'll talk about, we already said that the Nets had fired Lionel Hollins. Tony Brown was the interim head coach, but you and I both knew Tony Brown was not going to be the head coach going forward.
No, that's just we will wait and to do the actual due process as opposed to, oh yeah, here's our new guy, here's your contract. No interim title, which will, okay, we'll, you know, make good on that. Here's your deal. Nope, here's a deal day one, and very strange.
Very little improvement when Tony Brown took over. I don't think anybody expected, like, fireworks to be set off there anyway. You know, I remember when P.J. Carlissimo took over for Avery Johnson, and they got to the playoffs, and they actually played a lot better, and he didn't even keep his job. They gave it to who was the guy that they hired in his place, Jason Kidd, after he had just retired from the Knicks? Yeah, that was the that was the summer when because remember they lost to the Bulls. They had home court advantage and they lost to the Bulls. And a lot of people felt like that team played better under PJ Carlesimo than they did under Avery Johnson. Everyone said, well, you know, keeping PJ Carlesimo might not be the worst idea. Well, Pokeroff didn't do that. So they went with Jason Kidd and they made that horrifying, mind-numbingly stupid trade for Paul Pierce, Jason Terry, and Kevin Garnett, where they gave up three draft picks in a row. They've already suffered from that one because the Boston Celtics are going to have the number three pick.
Yeah, but that was just, you know, as I... You know, that was just to take Gerald Wallace's contract. And again, you know, the TV money, no one could predict that, oh, his, you know, completely dead money is now marginalized and it doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. And so the Nets actually went ahead and made the next move out because the Cavaliers officially hired Lou, obviously under sort of shady circumstances like we were talking about. The next move that came in there was on April the 17th, and the Nets hired away from Atlanta's staff under Budenholzer, Kenny Atkinson, who had been a former player. He's from the New York area, so he has local ties that way. You know, this is I think this will be the second time that somebody's been plucked from the Hawks staff. Quinn Snyder had coached under the Hawks, and he got hired by Utah. Is there any kind of style, I guess you could say, that we can equate with what Kenny Atkinson is going to do in Brooklyn? I know he's got some big guys there in Thaddeus Young and Brooke Lopez, and you've got a couple of interesting rookies like, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Chris McCullough. After that, it's a shit show. So what do you think they're going to be able to do in Brooklyn?
I think, you know, this was a smart hire that they didn't go for that NBA retread and, you know, somebody who's past their prime and been on five teams already and, yeah, you know, just mediocre. I think he's going to be brought in to find, you know, those sort of develop those rough gems and hope you find some sort of star, because you're not, you know, yeah, you could go out and overpay a free agent to come there, but at the same time, you need to fill out the roster, and I think he was brought in to primarily be that guy to develop the smaller people.
Yeah, when Budenholzer got to Atlanta, the team wasn't in terrible shape. Now, Larry Drew had coached the team about as far as he could as a coach, because I don't think Larry Drew was really made out to be a head coach anyway. But they had, now Josh Smith had left, but they still had Al Horford. They still had Jeff Teague. They had just brought in Paul Millsap from free agency from Utah. You know, they weren't in terrible shape is what I'm saying. With the Nets, there's a little bit more work to be done. They don't have the draft picks like we already illustrated to build it from within. They're going to have to get either a nice free agent or maybe just hit some doubles and some triples, you know, like you're saying.
Yeah, well, they got Kilpatrick. He's a nice double and solid, you know, seventh, eighth man.
Yeah, before the injury, Hollis Jefferson was playing well. And then when he came back from his ACL injury, which was late in the process, McCullough actually played decently. So you got those two.
So you have a couple of pieces to do. And, you know, there's always Europe where, you know, they got Bogdanovich, you know, who is, what, I think 28 when he came in. So you could get somebody from Europe over. You could overpay a second-tier free agent, you know, and hope he develops into that role.
Mm-hmm.
So there's options.
Any identity there, you think? Maybe some more three-point shooting? You know, the Hawks love to take the threes. Now, then again, Quinn Snyder went to Utah, and they're allergic to threes, you know?
No, I see this going back to the San Antonio, you know, slow it down type way, because, okay, maybe you could say they might go for threes, maybe you could say they might go for, you know, slow it down, but all you know is you have Thaddeus Young and you have Brooke Lopez, and that's it.
So. And I also have to mention Sean Marks being the GM. I think that was a reason why they didn't go for a retread. You know, you got a new face, a fresh face who has never been a GM. Sean Marks had come from the Spurs organization. He had been a player there from New Zealand. And he had done, I think he was like the GM of the D-League affiliate for a little while. You know, another guy who had done that before was Jacques Vaughn. it didn't work out so great for Jacques in Orlando. We'll see with Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn. It's not a sexy name, but then again, I think Brooklyn needs to look for the opposite of sexy. I think they just need to just kind of like bury themselves for a little while, try to build from the bottom up.
Well, that's why I like the pick, because this seems like something that, okay, we've lowered our expectations for a year or two. Let's get somebody, let's get a, develop a new, like with Brad Stevens, let's develop the coach along with the players and then, and the GM, and we can all sort of grow as one.
Yes. Okay, let's move on to the Western Conference. We talked about two East teams, and then the next team that sort of made their decision, even though they had already brought him into that position earlier in the year, was the Phoenix Suns. Now, the Phoenix Suns fired Jeff Hornacek in February, on February 1st. But I think everybody knew about a good 2 months before that happened that Jeff Hornacek was going to be gone, correct?
Yeah, that was just the, we hope we can get to the end of the season with him. No, we're rolling out the window.
Yeah.
No, fetch boy, let's toss the ball out the window and run.
Now, the guy who was inserted as the interim head coach was Earl Watson. Now, we have him in this part of the timeline at the third spot because Earl Watson was promoted to becoming the head coach on April the 19th. But here's my question. Was it simply that they didn't want to make the room for a new head coach out of, you know, out of nothing? Or was, did Earl Watson do anything discernible to make you think that the players were playing harder under him or he had better ideas?
Well, this, you know, first off, seems a little bit more normal. Here's an interim coach. We, the, you know, management likes him. We'll let him have a couple months. If the players don't openly revolt, okay, he's our guy because we want him. Didn't the first thing they did, the Suns, they fired their top two assistants. Wasn't that the case?
That is correct, yes.
So he's not even the top assistant to the group.
No, he was like the third guy. I was watching, there was a trailer for this new ABC show called Designated Survivor or something like that, and it's with Kiefer Sutherland, and he's like this lowly political hand who has to take the oath of the President of the United States because the Capitol blew up and everyone in front of him died.
Yeah, that's
so, so in this case, Earl Watson's like Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, and the team is just super guard heavy, so it's, well, if our two main guards, you know, take to him, I guess we can, and, you know, that team is just a mess, and we've mentioned before, I think the problem is the GM, not the coaching issue, and Hornacek, you know, was he great? No, but you can't really do anything if...
You're not a fan of Ryan McDonough?
No, you make a mistake one time, and then you double down, do the exact same thing again, and just go...
Mm-hmm.
The team is exactly the same, compact, you know, makeup wise, and then you add Tyson Chandler, which was the biggest mistake. So,
I don't know if I think we talked about this before. I don't know if Tyson Chandler is the worst contract in the NBA. You know, I think he's got three more years on his plate, but I mean, Omer Sheik's got a good competition for that. They've got some pretty.
He's a first team all bad contractor.
Yeah,
he might not be the MVP, but he's definitely making the first.
He'll be
team.
At double digit salary until 2019. So yeah, I mean at 8.7 rebounds, yes, but he is clearly sliding. Clearly, you know, I mean it's not even a debate there. You know, you got some pieces there like Bledsoe and Knight, who both had premature ends to the season with injuries. Bledsoe's injury was the one that sort of triggered the whole collapse, to be honest with you. You know, if Bledsoe had not gotten hurt, I think we would have had a little bit of rosier colored sunglasses than we are right now.
Yeah, but once he got injured, that really just, everything unraveled because that whole team was just a mess and there was no development of any bench whatsoever. And
yeah, TJ Warren hasn't really developed. Archie Goodwin hasn't really developed yet. We're not sure about PJ Tucker as a starter. That they might have to abandon that if they can get a good small forward in the draft. I do like Devin Booker. You know, Brandon Knight was picking it up pretty well. I thought Knight was actually playing well alongside Eric Bledsoe. And that's how they found their success under Hornacek. A lot of guards with high usage rate like Goran Dragic and who is the other one that I'm already blanking on that was playing with the Suns at the time. There was three of them, right?
There was Dragic,
there was Thomas who they signed away, and then there was Bledsoe. Yeah. And their usage rate is high. They don't assist the ball a lot. They like to kind of go after it on their own, but it was working somehow. You know, and
it was, but you know, again, you don't replace Dragic with Brandon Knight. It's the exact same system, the exact same cluster you had, and then you bring in Devin Booker, and it's like, wow, this guy is a spot-up shooter. He'd be great. Oh, now we have this complete logjam at the 1 and 2, and now where do we get him in? Do we try to move him to a 3, even though he's rail thin? It's...
Yeah, and you tried to build up your front court with sort of like versatile players like Alex Len and TJ Warren, who's got a bigger body but he can play the two or the three, but it just hasn't worked out well. Now you're sort of forced in a position where, like they did with Tyson Chandler, I understand the mentality at the time by McDonough, you want a sure thing in the front court. So they went with a guy, okay, well, we know Tyson Chandler can block shots and rebound. The problem is they got over the hill past his prime Tyson Chandler. An unmotivated Tyson Chandler.
Oh, Tyson Chandler will surely bring in his friend LaMarcus Aldridge because, what? No.
Well, he considered him. They said so that surprisingly Aldridge actually considered Phoenix longer than L.A. Like, L.A. totally, marked off the calendar. Whereas with Phoenix, he actually listened,
Well, L.A. just blew it by saying, we're L.A., and it's like, no.
So for Earl Watson, do you think this fit would be good or bad depending on what they can do in free agency, if they can bring another one in?
Is it a good fit? I don't see it as a good fit, but this is the player, this is the coach that...
How good was Earl Watson as a player?
For his size, very.
He was decent. I mean, I always confused him with C.J. Watson. Every time they're like, oh yeah, Earl Watson, I'm like, no, it's CJ Watson. But let's go ahead and move on here, and this one I actually like. I might, when we do the rankings, it might reflect that. The Minnesota Timberwolves obviously suffered, a pretty devastating blow, and it was beyond anything that they could do, and that was the death of Flip Saunders due to cancer, which is just a terrible, terrible thing. Now, here's the truth, though. We have to get the sympathies out of the way. How long was Flip Saunders going to last anyway as the coach and the president after the trade with Kevin Love, getting basically two number one picks in a row with Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns? But the team was still struggling. They were still going to be, they were on pace to probably be another 20-win team again. Do you think that Glenn Taylor was going to have the patience to keep Flip Saunders on, or do you think a change was necessary?
Well, a change was probably coming, and he probably would have kept the role as president, but maybe they might have developed another coach, down the line, but who knows?
Now, I never care for Sam Mitchell. I openly have never been a fan of that guy. I thought he was terrible in Toronto. I think he's actually a good TV guy, and that's where he belongs. But they did win 29 games after winning 16 the year before. A 13-game improvement is pretty good. Karl Anthony Towns was the undisputed Rookie of the Year. Andrew Wiggins slowly crept up in improvement. Zach LaVine was good. Ricky Rubio had a good overall year where he didn't get hurt. He played the majority of the season. So there are some things there to like in Minnesota, but do you think Mitchell had done enough to keep his job?
No. They're going to go make a splashy hire, because as good as he was, they still did crap out incredibly at the end. They had that strong first month of
February. I think they struggled big time.
We're doing it for Coach Saunders, and then it was just lots of nothing. And we had talked about the 76ers in the beginning. This is what happens when you have tons of lottery picks and high lottery picks. You just have a bunch of young people who don't. To think that Philly is going to be relevant anytime soon is, I think,
yeah, but here's the difference. In Minnesota, there's hope, and it's on the court. Like, you see it every day. Like, this guy's not figuring out yet, and we're losing games. Like, it was like Durant Westbrook, when P.J. Colissimo was there, and then when they fired him and Brooks took over at first. It was like, we don't see it yet, but these two might do something. Durant Westbrook might be the beacon for future success. With Andrew Wiggins and Karl Towns, I kind of feel that way too.
There is, but there's also this little 1% of buyer beware.
Okay.
Because, nobody's really talking, oh, this is the best hire, this is the greatest thing. But remember how he wore out his players in Chicago.
Now you talk about Tom Thibodeau.
Yes. Are we going to have like an Alabama situation where, well, Saban, he depletes all the he depletes all the energy out of our players, and they come out sort of shells? Is he going to run this team into the ground? Is he going to double down on his, now that I have more power, I can coach the way I want to coach? Or is he going to have the, maybe I see the errors of, maybe I went too hard there. Maybe if I scale it back 5%, I might, get more at the end of the season.
Well, I've listened to Thibodeau on an interview with Bill Simmons, and he had talked about how he kind of spent a lot of his offseason, you know, working with Team USA because he's one of the defensive aides on that coach. He'll be there in Rio de Janeiro, but he also visited a lot of different teams with coaches that he had been close with in the past. And he told me that the one that that impressed him the most was Golden State. He loved the way that the organization had kind of set itself up. He liked the way that the team practiced. He thought that they were lively in practice. He was able to sort of kind of have his Tom Thibodeau world tour, I guess you could say, where he could see different sides of the coin in terms of coaching. And you got to think that there's some self-adjustment there, Adam. You got to think there's a way that he looks at it and says, you know, maybe I did this wrong in Chicago. Maybe I did that wrong. That was his first time ever as a head coach after being assistant for decades. So,
well, yeah, you could say that, but again, you could also have that bullheadedness, no, you know, no pun intended, that you know, they I was doing the right thing. They are the ones who undermined me. They, you know.
Well, so. And that's true, and you know, that sentiment, I can see that sentiment being strong because of what happened in Chicago. Now, there's a little bit similar situation there with Stan Van Gundy in Detroit. He had a really bad falling out in Orlando, and he got fired. The difference was that Stan was on the shelf for a couple of years longer than Thibodeau. Thibodeau took a year off, whereas Van Gundy, nobody was calling his name for a while. Then he got the job in Detroit, and he also got the tag for team president. So did Tom Thibodeau. They're bringing in Scott Layden, who a lot of people will remember from his days as the GM with the Knicks and the Jazz. But Layden is sort of in a position where he's the general manager by name, but Tom Thibodeau's the team president. He's the decider. So what do you see here with Tom Thibodeau as, you know, having that autonomy over that Minnesota Timberwolves organization and those players?
Well, we'll start seeing when they start making moves because, you know, even with they have the sixth pick, fifth pick?
I believe so, yes.
But yeah, because
that lottery was actually the first time in a long time where there was zero drama, where there was no reshuffling of the picks. So whatever their odds were, that's exactly where they went.
Yeah, so because they have too many people now. They have log jams. They have their talent. Once they start making moves, we'll see, okay, this is what he's going to go for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's everybody. There's no reason to have that we got the best coach available. We got an identity now. We have hope.
Well, you know, we saw that with Doc Rivers in L.A. Everyone's like, oh, okay, they're going to play defense. They're going to slow everything down. It's not going to be run and gun. But that the opposite happened. You know, they went a lot of run and gun in L.A. the first year that Doc Rivers was there. He looked at the strength of his team. Okay, I got a great point guard in Chris Paul. I got, you know, a physical freak of two of them in the front court in Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. I need to take advantage of this. I need to speed teams up. I need to, you know, work on DeAndre Jordan's free throw shooting if they try to hack him. You know, it seemed like he went a little bit outside the box, but if, you know, he had to do it by necessity. That's what he was given.
Well, I wouldn't say by necessity. That's what, you know, I don't know why I'm going to say this, but that's what a good coach does is you look at your team and go, I'm going to change my strategy to fit my team, as opposed to, I'm going to will my system. I'm Kurt Rambis. You're going to do the triangle, but your players don't know how to do it. Nope. We're doing the triangle. The triangle works. Mm-hmm. You guys aren't picking it up. You guys are the problem. And not, well, I'm going to slow it down. Oh, maybe I shouldn't slow it down. Maybe I should do the exact, you know, these guys can't.
I have always felt like, and I know that slowing games down is sort of is like a trashy word now in the NBA because they're pacing space and speed things up and all that is sort of the buzzwords. But I've always felt like, Adam, for young teams, even against the fans' wishes, slowing it down is best. It's not a coincidence that Toronto improved on defense and they've gone farther than they've ever gone in the playoffs with those guys.
Well, that's the first thing is how do you get young guys to
learn.
Young guys basically stay in the league. Fundamentals and defense.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, you know, nobody, as much as, you know, Keon Looney in, you know, their first round pick was injured all last year. Will he stay in the league many years? What is he learning just with this run and gun offense, you know?
He's learning how to make a bunch of mistakes. But it also the depth on that team. I think that's different though, because the depth on the Warriors team is so incredible that you have to play well in order just to crack the roster.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm just, you know, how does somebody else, how do you get a young team to grow? Yeah, you start with the defense first and then the offense will come, because you still know how to shoot. Let's not focus on shooting. You know, we don't care if you have, you know, bad shit, as long as you know where to be. Because you're not going to teach that when they're 30 and they've already been in the league for 8-9 years, so...
Mm-hmm. I think this is a great fit. I think that the defense is going to get inserted where they've been terrible defensively in the bottom 5, bottom 10 for the last couple of years. They never take threes, so it's not like they're going to be starting off anyway unless Tom Thibodeau absolutely stuns me. We'll see with some of the assistants that they bring in, what they do with their lottery pick. But I think they're in good shape going forward. What do you think about this?
It's a great hire.
Let's go ahead and move on to a team that sort of sped things up, but nobody asked them to, and they struggled because of it in a way, if you ask me, and that was the Washington Wizards. They had let go of Randy Whitman on April 14th. That was the day that actually 4 coaches were fired. Sam Mitchell, Tony Brown, and George Karl also got fired that same day, right after the regular season was over. Randy Whitman is a guy that, you know, the thing about the Wizards is that they had those road wins in the playoffs all the time, which shows that they had toughness, but they just didn't have the smarts.
They just had the apathy. I don't think it was came down to smarts. It was just like, yeah, okay, we're on the road. We need to win this. Okay, you're at home today. Just, you know, do your best, guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's your participation medal. Just, we don't.
Yeah.
What place should we run? I don't know.
That's the thing I liked about what I saw out of Oklahoma City under Billy Donovan. They won those games. They won that game 5 and then San Antonio, and Donovan took that bull by the horns and said, no, we need to finish this shit off now. And they did it, and then they went to game 1 for Golden State. He said, we need to take this now. And they did, and I appreciated that out of Billy Donovan. With Randy Whitman, it was the opposite, you know?
Yeah, Randy Whitman was just, okay, you know, sign your name on the sign-in sheet. All right, everybody's here. Okay, go do some shoot-around. Go play. Do you want to make adjustments for halftime? Nah, we'll get back in. We'll come on. We'll get on a run.
Now, this is a team that would definitely make the play. I mean, of all the teams that we're talking about, obviously Cleveland is in good shape. The Pacers are probably in decent shape. We'll see with the Grizzlies and the Rockets going forward. But, you know, the Wizards are, to me, a perennial playoff team, even though they missed the playoffs this season.
Well, the Wizards, you know, they had their style, and they didn't really bend to it. They didn't really try to bend to it. As long as you have John Wall, you're going to be in the top, and even Bradley Beal for his limited minutes. And say what you want about their small forward situation, they still have 2 under rookie contract.
Well, they have a lot of needs going forward, and we'll talk about this in a separate topic, but they have so many unrestricted free agents on their depth that they have a lot of room to make improvements. They have $41 million in cap space coming up.
They have a chance to make their own identity, and, you mm-hmm. know, as much as, you know, you don't think this is a great pick, he has a chance to, you know, because when you have, you're coming off of Durant and Westbrook, you just, okay, it's those two guys, and your team goes as they go. I mean, not much else you can do.
And the guy that they brought in is Scotty Brooks. Now, Scotty Brooks was the head coach at Oklahoma City. Kind of helped bring – he didn't bring up Kevin Durant. Maybe Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook brought Scotty Brooks up in a way. But he did go to an NBA Finals. They had some very, very successful years in Oklahoma City while he was the head coach. He was fired the year that Durant had the broken foot, and Russell Westbrook was like almost like – you know, contending for the scoring title, putting up crazy numbers, but they missed the playoffs. It was unacceptable by Clay Bennett's standards, and Brooks was ousted. Like Thibodeau, he took a year off and kind of gauged his value to see where he could go, and he landed in Washington. Now, is there a style of play for Scotty Brooks in Oklahoma City that you could say, well, we can definitely see something like that in John Wall? Do you see something like what Russell Westbrook did, where John Wall takes more of an offensive output?
No, because you're asking the wrong person, because I'm so against Westbrook's game of just, I'm just going to be a fullback and just run into everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I can't shoot outside, so I'm just going to run into everybody. That's not really, you know, I don't know, it's not fun watching, really.
Well, I mean, Wall's a careful player. You know, I know he's had some injuries in Knicks and Nets, but, you know, he's a very, very good player in terms of, like, you know, distributing the ball.
He's a very smart player, which is a difference than, you know, what they had is, and, you know, really his undoing was Durant's injury. And then, well, here's these plethora of, you know, picks I've got. And then none of them panned out.
Now, I don't think they have any this year because they didn't get into the top nine, which was the only way they were going to keep that pick from the Markeith Morris trade. And they traded their number 44 pick to the Hawks. I think that was part of the deal where they reached up to get Kelly Oubre. Good luck.
Yeah, but they can always buy a second round pick. And,
yeah,
you know, we'll get into it with the previews in the draft. But really, is the number nine pick, who'd you rather have, Markeith Morris or who's around number 9 and 10? You know, Jakob Poeltl or...
Yeah, Jakob Poeltl, Domantas Sabonis, you know, somebody like that.
You know, so you get a nice little NBA veteran who's happy to be out of the dysfunction of Phoenix. So, you know, you have a chance, and it's, you know, a greener pasture. He took a year off, so it wasn't the I need to get back in. He had time to reflect, so...
Brooks's teams were very good rebounding teams and shot-blocking teams. It would not surprise me if they keep Marcin Gortat and Markeith Morris, or they experiment and have Markeith Morris come off the bench and bring in another big-time power forward through free agency. It would not surprise me. I think they're going to make the concerted effort to keep Bradley Beal. I think they're going to try to keep that working between Wall and Beal, because when they were healthy, I mean, Beal and Wall were killers in the postseason.
Yeah, but, you know, even Beal's like, I'll never be more than a 25-minute player.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, that's never a good sign.
I'm not giving up on Otto Porter Jr. yet. I think it's a little too soon. We got to give it another year. He's almost like Michael K. Gilchrist. Like, people just keep giving Gilchrist chances, and I'm just not sure. But, you know, maybe for Porter, I just have a little bit of hope there.
Yeah, but Gilchrist was known for having good D. Otto Porter's just known for being there, and the only thing he has going for is Kelly Oubre is 10 times worse.
True. You know, we'll see with the other free agency, but I think there's some hope there. But, you know, kind of like Phoenix with their forward position and all the questions of what they're going to do with their draft pick and free agency to improve the team under Earl Watson, I feel like this is a bit of a to be continued as well. I it's not a cop out. I think they will be a little better underneath Randy Whitman, but it is ironic that Scotty Brooks got this reputation as a guy who didn't know what he was doing, and, you know, he was in over his head, and he's taking over for a guy that actually was in over his head in Randy Whitman. So you'd think it'd be more of the same, but I'm not sure. I think Brooks has learned some things in Oklahoma City, and he's going to be able to implement things that the team can learn from and the team can improve with.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you could say, yeah, he's in over his head, but you go on from a place with good guards to a place with good guards. If he had, you know, let's say he went to Sacramento with, you know, a superior, you know, center, okay, well, that's not really his specialty and might be a little rough. But, you know, you're going from A to an A, so I don't see it as that rough of a transition for him.
You ready to talk about the Lakers?
We can briefly mention them.
The only thing that's – well, I'll tell you one thing that was brief, and that was the opening for the head coaching job, because literally within 5 days of firing Byron Scott, which was on a Sunday, Luke Walton was the head coach. Now, Luke Walton, we already talked about, he was serving as the interim in place of Steve Kerr while Steve Kerr was out with a back problem, and Golden State went on to have the best start in NBA history, you know, and he's still there on the team, you know, coaching them in the postseason, but he's already set. They already interviewed him. Talk about Rooney Rule and bypassing, you know, other candidates. I mean, this is the quintessential example of we want our guy, let's get him now.
Well, they just got lucky that he played for the Lakers, because every team, he was number one on every team.
The Phoenix Suns were desperately trying to get him.
Phoenix Suns, you know, Phil had met with him in New York, and, you know, it was just, hey, you want to coach the team you played on? Well, yeah, okay, we'll do it then.
Do you think the Knicks messed up again? Like, just like with Steve Kerr, you know, now, I'll say this. I think Bob Myers and the you know, Peter Guber and Lacob, they were a little cunning with the way that they brought in Kerr, where they saw something in him, even though he hadn't been a coach before, and they sort of wooed him away from New York, even though it was Phil Jackson that sort of put it out there at first, you know, back in February, that he wanted to bring in Steve Kerr. And so he interviews him, you're thinking the contract's going to get finished, and then the Warriors swoop in and take him. Do you think that, you know, it was kind of a similar situation with Luke Walton, where the Knicks were looking at him, thinking about it, Phil Jackson's got connection with him because he was with the Lakers when Luke Walton played there, and then the Lakers just kind of swooped in and took Luke Walton away?
Yeah, but there wasn't really much interest. It was just like, oh, I'll talk to him, we'll interview him, but we're not really making that a decision. I kind of want somebody who's going to keep doing the triangle, and there wasn't really commitment at like the Kerr issue.
Yeah, Luke Walton's always said, we're not doing no triangle. They're going to do with a lot of stuff they deal with Golden State. So, you know, we saw this with Alvin Gentry in New Orleans. Didn't work out so great. You know, I mean, that's year one. We still have more years to go through with Alvin Gentry in New Orleans to show what he can do. But for Luke Walton, I think this works. You know, you got a lot of youth there with D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle. Lou Williams will be there for a while. Jordan Clarkson is very, very young. Obviously, we've seen the last of Kobe Bryant to the celebration of some on this podcast.
No, the celebration of some because, you know, he killed the team this year with his albatross of a contract. And
his god-awful offensive efficiency.
Yeah, and then just you see the graceful people in there. I'll take a little less. I'll help other people. No, I want my money. I don't care about the team. It's just about me, and me, and that's the way he ended.
And so they kept their number two pick because they stayed in the top three. So you know, I guess the tank job by Byron Scott worked. You know, because it was sort of a tank job. Let's be serious here. That was all. A long, miserable march to get to that last game with Kobe where he can take all these shots and be fully healthy on his farewell. That's all it was.
Well, there's a difference between a good tank job and a completely horribly botched one like Byron Scott did where your players are all in.
But was it horribly botched, though? They lost all the games they were supposed to
lose. You lost the games because you had no talent, but you... A good tank job is you're developing players along as well.
Like Minnesota last year when they won the lottery. Like, they were 16 and 66. But, you know, they tanked because they knew they had no hope in the last 2 months of the season.
They had no hope, so okay, let's play Levine Levine 35 minutes. But he doesn't know how to play. That's fine with us.
Byron Scott did not want to play young guys. That was
D'Angelo Russell's too spoiled, so I'm gonna have him come off the bench. Yeah. You know, these guys don't know it. I need to play Ron Artest. Mm-hmm. Period. You know, that's a bad tank job. If we know we're not gonna win. We don't have it. But yeah, I want all my young guys out there as much as possible to learn.
Offensively, these guys were awful. I mean, Luke Walton's got to improve him at least to the middle of the league, or do you think they'll still be in the bottom 10?
So they'll still be in the bottom, because even if they get, you know, when they get Simmons Ingram, is that team going to be a playoff team in the West? No, they're still going to be beat down.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear any buzz about, well, they're going to make a big – they want to make the
Well, they have oodles of cap room, $66 million, which is
But
insane.
They're also a cancerous situation where, you know, they know, well, we can't lure people like we used to.
Mm-hmm.
So
– Well, they've already gotten that dose of reality from the past, three or four off seasons in a row where Mitch Kupchak gets into a room and he's like, hey, look at all these rings. You want to come? And they say – no, that's a shitstorm.
Look at all these Hollywood studios. Look at all that. You totally want this. No.
I read an article that said that, you know, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, the way they've built in Oklahoma City, has sort of turned, and also, you know, LeBron in Cleveland, the way he's turned that into a super team, that's sort of changed the minds of people that, you know, you can make it work anywhere.
Well, it wasn't that they built it. It was just, don't forget, Durant, number two pick. Westbrook, number four pick. Harden was number three pick. Ibaka was number nine.
Ibaka was like in the
20s.
Yeah, in the 20s. But he was a first round pick, though.
Yeah, so, you know, you have all these, you know, the Golden State, Curry, 8 pick. Thompson, 11 pick.
Yeah, Draymond Green was a second rounder, but that's a genie in a fucking bottle type of situation.
You know, so you have a lot of bad talent, but, you know, they're not going to be better in 1 year, and if they have those unrealistic expectations again, well, then they're just going to fail. But it's going to be a slow ride for Walton. If you go in that, you know, fans go in that, no, that's cool. You know, Kobe's over. We need to take a year
to in year two to build it back up. But like, no, we're just going to go buy people and it'll just be a disaster.
I am actually kind of interested to see D'Angelo Russell trying to kind of run a guard-oriented offense. I want to see what he can do, because in Ohio State, Thad Mata sort of let him go, and he was incredible to watch. So I think that this is actually going to be a little liberating for him. He just has to stay off the Snapchat, you know, kind of grow up a little bit. Julius Randle's going to rack up numbers. He averaged 10 rebounds a game, you know, essentially his rookie year. So I think there's potential there. You know, I don't think it's a totally lost effort, whereas in, you know, Philadelphia and Brooklyn, I think it's totally lost effort, you know.
No, but again, we don't know what type of player development Luke Walton is. And
true.
If it's going to be, you know, the thing with him and Kerr is, you know, they took a seat, you know, Kerr was the GM, so he, you know, was around personnel. You had Derek Fisher just right out, I'm retiring, I'm going to be a coach.
Yeah,
you know, but it was too soon.
And look at Jason Kidd. He did the same thing in that first month or two. He struggled. Like
he was awful.
Yeah, Lawrence Frank didn't want to be there, you know, and he kicked him off the team. And then they just slowly got better, and then he went to Milwaukee, and you could tell, okay, he's actually learned something over the last year or two, you know.
Yeah, they were awful. Then he changed his style up. It wasn't going to be, well, you know, you guys can play the way I used to play.
Mm-hmm.
No. Oh, now it's different, and you know, with Kidd, well, we still don't know. Now he has, you know, more organizational power, and, you know, Monroe was a complete disaster. But he's, you know, again, if you're going to think outside the box and put Giannis at the point guard, well, wait a minute. That's something that he would not have done in New York.
Okay, let's go ahead and start talking about it's another team from the Pacific Division. That's the Sacramento Kings. This is actually the only two teams in the Pacific Division that have retained their coaches in this offseason are Steve Kerr and Golden State and Doc Rivers with the Clippers. Phoenix, Sacramento, and the LA Lakers all made changes, so a lot of wholesale work being done on the West Coast. Sacramento, the Kings, they fired George Karl, but that was like the most – that was like the worst kept secret in the history of worst kept secrets.
They fired him publicly after firing him privately 10 times. Look, you know, we've mentioned the dysfunction of Sacramento, and I don't really think we need to get into this too much. So we could just, you know, they got Dave Yager.
I think people just like to say Yager mom because they're sophomore, but I think you it's know. Dave Jorger. I really think
I've heard it many different ways, unfortunately. So, you know, they got him from Memphis. It was a complete shock that Memphis let him go. They were very quick and smart to snatch him up as opposed to really just, you know, they were looking at retreads and they didn't really have a direction. But we don't know how good this will be because is Yager Yorger going to run the team or is Vlade going to run the team or is the owner going to run the team?
Yeah, but let me say this. Let's get this out of the way. We know Dave Jorger's a good coach. We know he is. You know, I don't think Memphis would have gotten as far as they did if Dave Jorger was not a good coach.
We know he's a good coach, but he had a very, you know, you had the same guys year in, year out, and that's what ultimately did them in.
But he did better than Lionel Hollins did. I know Lionel Hollins got into the conference finals, but they got swept miserably and he got let go. I think he did more. I think Jorger did more with Memphis than Hollins did.
Yeah, you can say, but again, it's just how much will he be able to do here is the question.
Uh-huh.
That's, we don't really know. He has nice pieces, but they're all literally pieces. They don't, none of them sort of fit. They're all mismatched, and who's in charge is still the question.
Well, Boogie's in charge. I mean, but here's the thing. Jorger's already been on the coach has had to lead a team where the main man or the main guys were front court players. I know Mike Conley's a really good point guard. We'll see what he makes in free agency. But with Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, that was the pillar of your team offensively and defensively. And so with Boogie Cousins, DeMarcus Cousins, you know, he can make it very easy where he could just kind of build an entire, you know, big man-centric offense because he's already done it before. He can install it pretty quickly without any like issues. It's all going to be if Cousins can, you know, can respond well to it.
Will Cousins buy in? If Cousins doesn't buy in, then, you know, Rondo will be gone. And you have, you know, Bellinelli, who's a 3-point shooter on a, you know, now on a team that doesn't, it probably won't shoot threes.
I don't think Rondo's gone for sure.
I don't. I think somebody is going to offer a little more than the Kings are willing to pay.
Yeah, because they gave. I think he got like $11 million or $10 million because his reputation was so sullied by the Dallas fiasco. But you know, he'll make big money. He'll get about $15 to $16 million.
That's the thing. That might be out of their range. They might be like, well, we'll pay 12 or 13.
Well, they did. Well, also they have to. They retain their. I think their draft pick this year, correct? Because they didn't have to swap. They didn't have the right – because the Sixers had the right to swap, not the Kings, on that really awful trade that they made with Nick Stauskas. So – but they did make some signings last year. Now, they weren't huge signings, but, you know, Kostas-Kufos makes $8 million. Bellinelli makes $6 million. They still got Darren Collison for one more year, who actually had a pretty good year. Ben McLemore is in there. Willie Cauley-Stein's there. You know, they actually have – a stable roster in terms of like names, but in terms of style, absolutely, it's all over the place.
That's the thing, and it sort of comes down to, you know, I had mentioned this to you earlier, was I think everything just sort of revolves around Rudy Gay, as he might be just the odd man out.
Well, Jorger is familiar with Rudy Gay in the Memphis days when he was an assistant, so there's that. There's that very loose connection.
Yeah, they have that connection, but it's just his style, you know, the small, you know, it doesn't. He seems to be the, we could trade him, we could get somebody better. I don't see that. I don't see him being a fit. That's just.
No, yeah, because he's only got two more years. The last one being a player option is $13 million. I would have to think Gay will take that because I don't think he can get $13 million on the market at his age. So anybody who takes that trade, you're going to get Rudy Gay for probably 2 years, unless you can move him again. But I don't think that's dead money. I don't think Rudy Gay is a bad player at all. So I think that he has enough value where they can move him for sure.
No, he's still a great player, and that's, you know, that's become a sort of a value deal. But it's, you need to, again, he's just not a fit. And,
yeah,
you
know. The top pace stuff is going to drop. We know that for sure under Jorger. The points allowed, it'll get better. They've been in the bottom 10, awful, you know, block shots. Awful, you know, free throw percentage, who knows, but offensively we might see a dip, but you know, it's at the expense of the defense getting better, the pace slowing down, and for Sacramento to slowly get better. I think they were 33-49. You know, it was the first year that Renadave was really serious about trying to improve the team on with the roster, but I think they'll probably be a 40 win team next year.
They did, you know, they did better, and like I said, they made, you know, solid picks, and George Karl did get that team to overachieve. It's just, there's nothing you could do if you're just undermined every which way.
Yeah, and I mean, Michael Malone's gone. You already burnt that bridge, you know. So I mean, that to me was, I can't believe Michael Malone was that resonant with DeMarcus Cousins, but he was.
Yeah.
You know, it's very strange. Okay, these two are connected, so I'm going to keep them together, and that's the Indiana Pacers and the Orlando Magic. But I'll start with the Pacers first. They got to the playoffs. They went 7 games with the Toronto Raptors, losing in Game 7 in Toronto. Paul George had an incredible year. They changed the style a little bit after they let go of David West, and they traded Roy Hibbert. So a little bit of a change, bringing in Monte Ellis, a little bit higher usage of George Hill. Maybe a little too much for my liking. But anyways, they make the decision, Larry Bird does, to let go of Frank Vogel. Now, how surprised were you when you heard the rumors that he might be out?
Well, that just happened very quick, and, you know, it came down to, I want you to play Paul George the four. No. Okay, we've gone as far as we can with you. I see Paul George the four. Well, we tried that, and I did that for you, but I like having, you know, Ian Mahimi and Miles Turner in there.
Well, Miles Turner was great in the playoffs. I'm not sure about his regular season stats. He were at 10 points, 5 rebounds, and 1.4 blocks, which is really good. But in the playoffs, he was a revelation.
Well, he had a thumb injury, so he was out for like a month or 6 weeks. So
yeah,
that really stunted his development. But yeah, he was sort of the, you know, again, that Texas connection of everybody is just, you know, underachieving there in college, and they come to the NBA, wow, they could actually do something.
Now, I mean, we talked about Vogel when he had taken over in 2011 when Jim O'Brien was dismissed. What would you, if we had to do like a scale of 1 to 10 or even a grade, like a letter grade, what would you give Vogel's there in Indiana? I'd give it probably like a B+.
I would say a solid B. B+ is, yeah.
I mean, it was, I think that team overachieved under Vogel, to be honest with you. And he had different styles. He had the year with Danny Granger where he was still an all-star. And then he had Paul George, who sort of asserted himself as the star player, and then they challenged the Heat those 2 years in 2013 and 14. Then he had to change everything over when Paul George broke his leg, which was just a really, really unfortunate break for them, no pun intended.
Well, it was a, you know, yeah, it was a freak accident, but don't forget, George was also brought in as a two out of Fresno State.
Mm-hmm. And he was a guard. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And then, you know, he worked his way. Okay, I need to move him to the three. And
well, he had the crazy growth spurt in the lockout. Like, it was like he grew like 3 inches or 2 inches.
Something.
Like he went from 6'7" to 6'9". So he was like a 6'9" small forward with long ass arms, who was more athletic than everybody else he was faced against, except for like two or three guys.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, he was able to adapt to that, but at the same time, did you know, Bird really put a lot of pieces around him? It was just, you know, they got Monta Ellis, where, you know, if you think that's your missing piece, then, oh, you know, you're sort of, oh, that's a...
So are we feeling like that they made a mistake in promoting Nate McMillan, who had been an assistant there? He was brought in, I believe, in the 2013-14 season, when Jim Boylan left to go coach in San Antonio. I think he was the replacement. Nate McMillan's got experience. He was in Portland. He had, you know, coached the Sonics after he had retired. A lot of success in terms of numbers of wins, but, you know, everyone has like rose-colored glasses, no pun intended, because they played in the old Rose Garden. But everyone had rose-colored glasses about the Portland Trailblazers when Nate McMillan was there, because they had like all these, you know, young guys that seemed like they could come together and build a future title contender like Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge and Greg Oden, and everyone just kind of wanted them to do well, and they felt like they screwed up by firing Kevin Pritchard. And, you know, I basically felt like Nate McMillan got a pass, but I don't think Nate McMillan was that great of a coach anyway.
He wasn't that great, and, you know, he's just an NBA retread, didn't really do anything. You know, you can't say, you know, the Greg Oden pick was his fault, but you know, Brandon Roy, number 6 or 7 pick. Aldridge was the 4th pick. And, yeah, you know, you had another just, you know, lots of lottery picks, and then didn't really do anything. Yeah. But it's just, you know, again, it comes down to, well, are you going to listen to GM? Oh, yeah, I think I could play George at the 4. Okay, well, you've got the job. Mm-hmm. You know, the players are going to be okay with it because, well, we still know them. It's not something new. They'll play the exact same style.
So you feel like that? Do you feel like Bird made a mistake?
Well, don't forget he let Carlisle go, and then all of a sudden he wins a championship at Dallas.
Mm-hmm. And he brought in Jim O'Brien, who was just like, just a bad fit, just a really bad fit.
Well, you know, O'Brien, he was, you know, he had the interim label in Boston, and then did what he could there, then wore out his welcome, and just.
Well, they took a bunch of threes in Boston in those days with Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce and Tony Delk and Ricky Davis, and then he goes and he tries to take a bunch of threes in Indiana. They don't even have 3-point shooters. It was just,
well, that's the thing, is a good coach will develop to the team you have, or as opposed to, nope, I shoot threes, but coach, we all suck at it. Nope, we're shooting threes today.
You know, with McMillan, do you feel like there is any adjustment? Well, I mean, I don't even know about Paul George moving forward is actually even going to happen. You know, I don't think that was the one thing that, you know, determined Vogel's dismissal. I think
it's not the one thing, but factors. It seems to be the glaring, you know, the elephant in the room of Bird still, you know, still, if you're still doing interviews going, no, he's still.
I think what it is that Bird knows that speeding things up might make the offense better, and he wants to get that offensive efficiency out of the bottom 10, out of the middle of the pack. He wants a really good offense to keep up with the Joneses, like the Clevelands and the Torontos, you know, teams like that.
Well, that, and the same time, you know, you've seen with Granger, you know, the windows for superstars are very short, so You don't want to waste Paul George's best years, and all of a sudden you get like a 32-year-old Paul George.
But if it doesn't work out with McMillan and things fall apart, all of a sudden you have an unhappy Paul George, and that's even worse. Now you've really done yourself in. Now we're going to talk about the Orlando Magic, because that works in turn with this. When Frank Vogel was fired along with Jorger, you knew they weren't going to be on the market for very, very long. Jorger got snatched by the Kings. Literally, like, I think Jorger was fired on, I believe, like a Friday, and he was hired on a Sunday. You know, by the
it Kings. Was extremely quick, because, you know, coaches like that.
It almost reeked of desperation by the Kings. It almost reeked of desperation.
Yeah, pretty much.
Whereas with the Magic, you know, it was interesting because they didn't fire Scott Skiles. Scott Skiles quit. He resigned from the position because he felt like he was not, and this is his quote, "I don't feel like I am a good fit for this team."
Yep, you know, and that's just, you don't quit on your team no matter what you do. It's just, that's just not a good look for you.
No, but there has to be some other innuendo behind that, why it happened. We had already talked about it in the previous podcast about there were rumors that he didn't like Alfred Payton. He wanted to ship him, and the Orlando Magic are just high on him. You know, Hennigan, they want to keep him. The GM being – I think his name is Rob Hennigan. I always mix him up with John Hennigan because John Hennigan is the real name for the wrestler John Morrison. who was like that Jim Morrison lookalike guy. He was like really I don't know. We're getting off topic now. But Hennigan is the GM of the Magic. But you know, Jacques Vaughn didn't work out so well. Fired. Brings in Scott Skiles. He had the 30 assist game with the Magic in the expansion years. He was there when Shaq was first there. You know, really, you know, solid coach, you know, when Chicago and Phoenix. But the thing about Skiles is that I said this when we previewed the team in the first place, this season. Scott Skiles is not the guy. A lot of times he's the guy before the guy. You know, in Chicago, if you look at Chicago and Phoenix and Milwaukee, when you move two coaches, like when you move two generations forward, those are usually the guys that bring them to the top. But Scott Skiles is the guy that can improve the team. Did you feel like there was any improvement there with the Scott Skiles?
Well, Skiles was the guy, but in all these places, he wore out his welcome, and he, you know,
he's a grinder. Yeah, he's a grinder.
He's a grinder, and he had everybody, you know, he turned everybody against him at the end, and, you know, three places he didn't learn anything this way. And at the same time, his tenure was so short. He started off so hot, then January, didn't they go, I think they went winless, or they maybe went one game, and then
yeah.
The team completely fell apart. You trade away your supposed centerpiece.
Trading Tobias Harris first, Ilya Sova, and Jennings. That's looking worse and worse as we go by the weeks. Worse and worse.
But, you know, who made that trade and who wanted that? And it sounded like that was Skiles people. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I don't like it, so I'm gone.
Okay, so yeah, you got Skiles that leaves in Orlando. You knew they were going to get a pretty decent name, whether it was going to be, you know, Jeff Hornacek, who had gotten fired, or if it was going to be a good assistant.
Well, they were shopping around. They were looking at a lot of assistants, I read, and, yeah. You know, we'll see who we get. We find a fit, and then all of a sudden, Vogel's there? Okay, well.
Yeah, and Frank, and there goes Frank Vogel. So, you know, it's a lot of musical chairs, a lot of vengeance tours going on here where, you know, you got Vogel in Orlando. We got one last one that we're going to be talking about with the Knicks. You got Dave Joerger. You got Scotty Brooks. I mean, and Tom Thibodeau. You got people that get fired to get hired. You know, it's what it is. It's musical chairs. You got a lot of guys that have been previously coaches at other spots that go somewhere else. It's not all – now, some of these coaches are in positions where they're going to say, oh, well, I'm going to show them what I can do. Whereas for Frank Vogel, you know, I think he's got a little bit of an axe to grind.
He could if you want, but at the same time, he didn't bring him to that next level. You could say maybe because they didn't have the talent, maybe because they didn't have...
You're talking about Indiana?
Yeah, maybe...
Oh, I really felt like he brought him to the next level. He got him as far as he possibly could.
Then that could be... You could have an axe to grind, or you could... But, you know, you don't go from an axe to grind with, you know, a solid all-star lineup to just, you know, young players who are on their third coach in...
Yeah, and you know, we weren't sure with Skiles what he was going to try to do in terms of style. Offensively, they were trying to get better, but their efficiency was so bad. They don't, you know, they never get to the free throw line. They never make free threes. You know, I feel like Vogel is going to just going to do what he's used to doing. He's like, okay, the thing is, Scott Skiles left on the conditions that he was a bad fit, or he was not the guy for Orlando.
Well, he left as a crazy person, leaving a manifesto.
Which might give you the sense that there was a little bit of a power trip there between the GM and the coach. So when a new coach comes in, does that mean that he has to walk on eggshells because you don't want to offend the coach's wishes or offend the GM and the owner's wishes? Or you just go out there and just do what you got to do?
Well, it depends if you're a panic hire and you're both on the same page. Mm-hmm. If you're a panic hire, as Jorger is, yeah, you might have some clashes where you want to use your team differently than what the GM set up. If you're just like, hey, you're young people, this is what you want, I'll try to make what you guys want work.
Mm-hmm. And I think they have good heads on their shoulders here in Orlando. I think Vucevic is a bona fide stud. I think you've got Victor Oladipo there, I'm still not giving up on. Evan Fournier is a restricted free agent, we'll see. Aaron Gordon, incredible athlete. They might pick up the team option on Ilyasova. So they've got Hezonja. So you got some names there. You know, I think they can build this, dude. They have
very much like Minnesota. You have a very friendly roster of, wow, these guys could be good. It's just, well, what do we want to do with it?
I think the difference is that because the East is the bottom of the East is a little bit easier to tread upward. I think the improvement is going to be quicker in Orlando, but I feel like in Oklahoma City, I apologize, in Minnesota, I feel like the best, the ceiling in Minnesota is incredibly high, whereas in Orlando, the ceiling is maybe make the second round, you know, under Vogel.
Vogel is just, you know, if they even make the first round, sort of like, you know, you do that Van Gundy Detroit thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, none of you guys have seen playoffs. Let's go try to make, we don't care if we get swept and we get destroyed every game. We just want you guys to see how different it is.
And the coaching carousel is continuing, but the next drop-off that we've had so far was on May the 19th. Any wrestling fan knows May 19th. I'll just keep that inside joke out there. And then the Knicks brought in Jeff Hornacek, who had been dismissed by the Phoenix Suns. Now, Jeff Hornacek worked a miracle for about a year or two in Phoenix, you know, in 2014 and 2015, where nobody thought that they were going to be competitive, and they somehow almost made the playoffs twice. So,
well, that was their downfall, was what, they, expectations? Playoffs? We could do that.
And so, Hornacek, I mean, I watched Phoenix. They are not a triangle team. Do you feel like this was sort of a give-up by Phil Jackson? Because there were so many rumors there that Kurt Rambis was going to be kept as the head coach after serving as the interim because he was like a triangle disciple. They had the rumor about the seminar that Jackson hosted for the how to run the triangle, which was met with a lot of bad reaction. And, you know, Hornacek is sort of a different name. It's just a different type of person. So, you know, what do you think is going to happen?
It's a different type of person. And, you know, you hear reports that Melo, you know, I'm not going to get traded, but, you know, don't make me unhappy. I don't like Rambis. I don't like the triangle. Well, you got to, you know, it was sort of there's nobody really left. You guys don't want Rambis. There's nobody good. We could get an assistant who will just be, you know, washed out in a year or two. Mm-hmm. So I don't see really what. Yeah, I don't see it as a great hire. I just see it as completely uninspired.
Well, Hornacek is good at working with guards. Now, he had a really contentious relationship with Markieff Morris, but that was driven by the management trading Marcus to Detroit. You know, that was when Markieff's twin brother was traded, he had given up on Phoenix. That was something beyond Hornacek's power.
It wasn't his contentious relationship. It was the owner saying, these guys are too spoiled. They don't know how to play.
Yeah.
You know, when you have your ownership, just, you know, again, what can you do if you're undermined?
Mm-hmm. And he had lighter forwards in Phoenix, so he played a little bit of a finesse style. There's just no guards to speak of here. You know, you got Galloway, and you have, like, frickin' Aaron Aflalo, who has a player option at $8 million. We don't know if he'll even stay. Jerian Grant was a rookie. He looked okay at times. He looked bad most of the time. And then you've got a lot of money put into – or a lot of money and a lot of time put into that front court with Carmelo Anthony at the small forward, Robin Lopez at center, and then obviously the unicorn, Kristaps Porzingis, at the power forward position. So now you go from a team where your strength is your guard play to a team where your strength is your front court. So what kind of adjustment does Hornacek have to make?
He needs to realize that his guards suck in New York. This is Carmelo's team. You just become a wing-based team. I mean, there's nothing you could do with another. I think all first team bad contract is Calderon.
Okay. Who,
you know, that he's finally in the last year of his deal. It's just there's no hope for him. And
Yeah.
You know, you're Langston Galloway, Grant hasn't developed the way, really, period.
And they don't have as much cap space as you think, thanks to Carmelo Anthony's really bad max deal. You got $22 million of cap space. And well, you gave all that money to Robin Lopez.
You gave money to Lopez, you gave Flalo. $8
million, yeah.
And, you know, Porzingis you have, who's great. You don't have a pick, and there's just, well, you could, you know, go for a guard. And, you know, again, you know, you have players saying, I don't like the triangle offense. I wouldn't go to New York because I have the triangle. I'm not a triangle player. No, I think you could thrive in it.
But I think Hornacek will do better than Derek Fisher did.
Well, anybody who's not named Jacques Vaughn could do better than Derek Fisher, I think.
I don't know if Derek Fisher's going to get another coaching job. He might, you know, way down the road, but
he'll get a coaching job if he goes to be an assistant and wants to go learn. Mm-hmm. If you're just I'm an NBA coach and have, it's just that, do you want to be perceived as an NBA coach? Mm-hmm. Or do you actually want to be one?
Do you think it's weird. I've been reading, you know, a lot of the news about the coaching moves and the interviews, and it almost seems like it's funner to be recruited as a top aide for a team than becoming a head coach. It's not like the money disparity is very high, but you can build your reputation as an assistant, and if the head coach gets fired, it doesn't necessarily mean the assistant gets fired. Look at Chicago. None of the assistants got fired. Adrian Griffin and the other one that they had, I think his name was – I can't remember his name, but he had – two of them had left. They left the organization on their own, whereas everybody else in Chicago under Fred Hoiberg, they were already installed in the organization before Hoiberg even got there. Hoiberg couldn't even hire his own guys. It's almost like the assistant coaches are more secure in their positions than the head coach is.
Pretty much. And, you know, look at Toronto. You know, we're not going to find the head coach, but we're going to get assistant coaches that we like now. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot cheaper to just replace a guy who's making, what, $1 million as opposed to having guaranteed $4 million, $5 million dollar deals.
The two spots here that are still open as of now are two teams from the Southwest Division. Let's talk about the Memphis Grizzlies first. Why do you think Robert Parra is taking so much time with this?
Because he's confused.
Or Chris Wallace, whoever's making the decision.
There's nobody left, and you did this way too late in the process. And I think they are having legitimate issues as where do we want to go as a team? What's our game plan?
Yeah, Mike Conley being up in the air with it is a big part of it too, maybe.
Yeah, Conley up in the air, and then really who do we have on our roster? Who, you know, what do we do with Gasol? And you know, Randolph is getting older. Where do we want to go as a team first before we bring in this coach as opposed to let's get the coach and he'll dictate where we go with this team?
I'll throw you some rumored names. James Borrego, who was the interim head coach for the Magic when Jacques Vaughn was fired, and he went back to the San Antonio, and he's been an assistant there. Fellow assistant in San Antonio, where you see a lot of guys get hired. Ettore Messina. International guy. Patrick Ewing, who has been rumored for head coaching jobs for a long time but never gotten hired. David Fizdale at Miami. You got Nate Tibbetts at Portland. I'd also throw out there Nick Nurse, one of the assistants at Toronto. And some other names, you know, I think Mark Bryant at Oklahoma City is a guy that people should take a look at sooner or later. And then you've got Caleb Canales, who's one of the assistant coaches at Dallas. You know, so you got some names there that, you know, people like, but who do you think would
be a good
fit?
Well, who knows? Because you're an assistant coach. What have you set for yourself? Unless you're, you know, an assistant coach retread, you know, who's taking a step
back. We'll
talk
about that one in a sec. Yeah, the retread.
Yeah, you're going for fresh blood, which I think is good, and I think these executives are sort of learning. We can't just get somebody who's coached 500 games mm-hmm. and expect it to be different than what they've done before. Mm-hmm. So let's just try to have a different, you know, not to say Brad Stevens to sort of change everything up, but well, we need to get somebody who's fresh and moving.
I don't think we'll see any college coaches this year. I think that.
No, we're not having college. I meant we need the fresh blood. Mm-hmm. Not the, let's get, you know, Billy Donovan.
Well, Donovan was so successful in Florida, at Florida. And, you know, he had pro experience working with, like, future pros, you know, for the with Team USA, for like the under 18 and under 19 squads. And Brad Stevens is like, he's like Tom Herman with the University of Houston, the football coach. He's like a legitimate genius. You know, like he, I think Brad Stevens has like an IQ well above like our world leaders. You know what I'm saying? He is a very, very, very smart man. And he's got smart guys around him. Like, I think Micah Shrewsbury is going to be gone soon. I think somebody will pluck him in a year or two.
Yeah. And that's, you know, so getting the assistance.
What about Jay Larinaga? You think he'd be a good fit in Memphis?
No, just another year or so.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't really know much about Fizdale, but we know a little bit about Borrego because he was an interim coach. Messina from his international teams, you know, with Argentina and them. And then you got Tibbetts and Portland and Ewing and, you know, who had coached in Houston and Charlotte and all these. And I think he was in Orlando for a while. I mean, do you think Ewing would be a good pick here? Or?
I don't see how he'd be really worse than anything else. It's just the I don't know why he's being blacklisted. It could have just been his – well, you know, when he's like, I want to be a head coach – but you need to be an assistant first, and you don't have any – it's not as easy as you think. And, you know, he's been an assistant for, what, 10 years now, but he's still not the lead assistant?
He was an assistant when Yao Ming was in Houston, so, yeah, it's been a while.
He wasn't really an assistant. He was more of the big man player development guy.
Yeah, kind of like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was every now and then.
Yeah, so you're the lowest end of the assistant coach.
You work – hey, you need to work with just this one guy. Could you just work on this one guy? You know,
yeah,
and then the other one is like Brian Shaw. Brian Shaw doesn't want a head coaching job. He wants that assistant coaching job that Luke Walton's going to abandon. And the other guy that the Golden State might recruit for that position is Steven Silas from the Charlotte Hornets. And now Steven Silas is being courted by the Rockets. I mean, if I'm Steven Silas, I'm a really young, hot name. Would I take that Warriors assistant job or I would take one of these head coaching jobs?
Well, it's a lot easier to have no pressure and just be on a winning team as opposed to being the guy and your team starts sucking, everybody starts looking at you. So it's a lot, you know, is that extra $5 million worth it?
But there's a lot of work that goes into the assistant coach that the head coach can sort of bypass too. You know, that has to factor in as well. But if you're used to it as an assistant, it's not as hard. Whereas if you're only a head coach and you become an assistant, then it gets really hard. You know.
Oh yeah, it's a lot harder. But again, you know, the light's not shining on you; it's always shining on the coach. If you fail, you don't blame. Well, if my assistant coach didn't. Nope, it's the head coach. He's the problem. And like you've seen with teams now keeping the entire assistant roster and just firing the head coach. Well, you know, it's a little more security.
Is there any bigger like disparity of a decision than the Rockets have between Mike D'Antoni, who the owner Leslie Alexander really likes, and then Steven Silas, who's like a young, fresh face out of Charlotte? Like, how much more opposite can that get?
It's just, you know, it comes down to is, do you want to make James Harden happy and have the rest of the team be god-awful, or do you just want to make the team good and then Harden, you know, make him unhappy? Because it's just, that would, D'Antoni would just be the worst hire, because
if Mike D'Antoni goes to Houston with James Harden there, that would, like, produce the worst offense you've ever, the most one-on-one offense you've ever seen.
Harden will score. He'll average like 50 points a game, but you know, that team is not built to be a fast running gun team, period.
No, not now. And then with Dwight Howard leaving, we'll see. You know, they'll suddenly have cap room to do what they want. You know,
they have cap room to do what they want, but with Patrick Beverley and Corey Brewer and
Domantas Monte Yunus, yeah.
You know, you're not, that team is not going to run and gun, and it's just, you have hard, it'll be Harden against the team and the world, and,
yeah.
You know, it's just a horrible, even, you know, freshman, you could just get even any retread, it's just D'Antoni is just so far.
He is now the definition of retread, and it's so sad, because when he was in Phoenix, he was so, just the idea of a Mike D'Antoni offense was like, oh yeah, that's what I want. And now it's like, you watched Mike D'Antoni and you're like, God, what a crappy old man, you know?
It's like anything else. You see it, oh my God, that's what I want, until you figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, having the, oh, we need the Michael Vick or RG3, you know, we need that 4-4 QB. That's great. Oh, wait, we figured it out. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, everything's great until you get a lot of tape on it, and then people start seeing holes.
Okay, and we're going to wrap this up by ranking the ones. Now, we have to exempt Memphis and the Houston Rockets because they haven't obviously made their decision on a head coach yet. So we have 10 spots here, okay? Let's just kind of start, by default with Cleveland at the top spot at number one, okay? And we'll just go from there.
Cleveland, I'm going to exempt because that was just an inside job. It's shady.
They got to stay in there. They got to stay in there.
That's just an asterisk.
All right, asterisk. The asterisk Cavs. Brooklyn Nets. We'll slot them in here. Did you like the Suns keeping Earl Watson more than the Nets keeping Kenny Atkinson?
No, I like Atkinson better because Watson what did he really show? It was just he was the last man standing, really.
So the Nets over the Suns here. Tom Thibodeau going to Minnesota.
I think we both have that as number one.
So you have the Timberwolves getting them as number one, even more than look, Tyronn Lue, he's only lost one game in the playoffs so far. I mean,
have a toaster. He's the head coach of the Cleveland Bulls still.
Now, remember when Byron Scott was fired and Lawrence Frank won his, first 20 games? You remember that? And it was like, oh, Lawrence Frank's the greatest coach ever. You know? It's like, no, they just got hot. Washington Wizards hiring Scottie Brooks. I'd put him below the Cleveland one, but I think that's better than Kenny Atkinson going to Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's the middle of the packer.
Okay. Luke Walton going to the Lakers. I like that less than Scottie Brooks going to the Wizards for some reason.
I agree.
Just a slight bit. I like Luke Walton, but I think that's going to take a little bit more time than people think. I am not big on Dave Joerger going to the Kings.
I am big if they let him do his thing. If they don't let him do his thing, then this is the I don't want to say the biggest floor to ceiling ranking of a coach.
It is. I think the biggest ceiling is Minnesota. You know, that's why I like them the most, because I think – I might get killed for saying this. I think the Minnesota Timberwolves could win the NBA championship. In about 3 or 4 years, I think they could win an NBA championship with what they're building.
We'll see in 3 to 4 years.
I might eat my words for
okay,
that.
So then it would be, just slightly under in 4 years because Cousins will still be in his prime. And
okay. So you like that more than Scottie Brooks going to Washington?
Yeah, because it sounds like it could bring stability, but again, it also sounds like a panic hire. And
but we have to put it below the Cavs because we've already seen the results from Cleveland, so, whereas with Joerger and Sacramento, we've seen nothing.
Okay.
I mean, or do you want to debate that?
That's the reason I removed Cleveland is the same way you can say, even though his games didn't count, Walton went 39-0.
Well, we can debate, how much Tyronn Lue is really going to be, how far he can really go on his own with the team too,
Yeah, if his stars left, I don't see him doing, if anything. And
yeah, like most guys.
Exactly.
Okay, and Nate McMillan to the Pacers. Do you like that?
I don't like it.
Do you like it less than Luke Walton to the Lakers?
I put about par. It's just I don't see McMillan changing anything. So
Lakers and Pacers are almost at a dead heat. Jeff Hornacek with the Knicks. I'll say that's below Nate McMillan of the Pacers. I think he'll do better than Kenny Atkinson will at Brooklyn because I think Hornacek's got a few more pieces.
He's got pieces, but it's just uninspired. And
I agree.
You're not going to move the needle with that.
It was literally uninspired. An inspired effort by Phil Jackson would have been getting a really good coach. Whereas with Jeff Hornacek, it's he's available, and if I get another triangle guy, the media is going to be on me. So let me just pick him. Orlando getting Frank Vogel. I like this more than Joerger going to the Kings.
I would just put it slightly below Joerger. But, we're gonna have to I can, here. It's in the same, either or.
Okay, then we'll put them right below, one on top or right below.
They're even. It could be, it's 1 and 1A.
So, so we have, at the bottom, we have Earl Watson being retained in Phoenix. Then at number 9, we've got Brooklyn hiring Kenny Atkinson. It's no offense to Kenny Atkinson. We just haven't seen anything, okay? Like a lot of these teams, we haven't seen anything. But with Kenny, we don't even know what he can do.
Well, that's the same place. Memphis hasn't made their hire, but he would be the same place as Atkinson.
Exactly.
What are you going to do with your
team? If they hire Borrego, he's coached a little bit, but you'd be obviously skeptical.
At the same time, and then also if D'Antoni gets hired, he would be so far.
The difference also with the Grizzlies and the Rockets, regardless of when they hire their higher the picks and then we reshuffle this or we re-rank this, is that they had success before these coaches got there. So now the expectations are different. Now it's like, okay, you're going to make the playoffs, right? And now it changes things, you know? Whereas these teams, I don't think people are expecting to make the playoffs. Like, I don't think the Lakers are thinking, oh, yeah, we got to make the playoffs. I don't think the Nets or the Suns are thinking that either. So that,
well, all it takes is a crazy owner, which, you know, Lakers have crazy GM, but...
You mean like Tom Benson and his wine and his candy?
Yeah,
and then he's been with Tyreek Evans and Drew Holiday. Yeah, really smart.
You know, that's another topic for another day, but... Hindsight's 2020.
I had to bang that drum again. And then we got at number 8, we got Jeff Hornacek with the Knicks. And then 7, 6, either way, we got the Pacers getting Nate McMillan or promoting him. And then you got the Lakers getting Luke Walton. At number 5, we have Scottie Brooks to the Wizards, which we all kind of like, but it's middle of the pack. Like,
well, it moves the needle a bit. Anything below that doesn't really inspire.
I really do think the Wizards are better from that move. I do think they'll be better.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. The Magic will be better by Frank Vogel. You know, I just don't know how much better. Like, I don't know what their ceiling is yet. You know, I don't think the makeup of the roster is complete yet. You know, I think they have another draft pick in them. That's really
good. They have a draft pick and they need to get a veteran and they need to start. You can't just keep getting these lottery picks and just.
At 3, we have the Kings going to getting Frank Vogel. And then at 2, we got the Asterisk Cavs bringing in Tyronn Lue after LeBron cut David Blatt's head off. And then number 1, we all like Tom Thibodeau. He's a proven commodity, really, and he's going to be the head coach and the president of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So that's going to be taking care of that ranking. Did you have any missives about anything?
No, we're good.
I mean, what kind of advice would you give to like any of these future head coaches?
Either win or you're fired.
What about the ones that are like coaches that had been head coaches previously and need to learn from their mistakes? Like, what would be the best advice?
I don't have in all the places outside of really, really Pat Riley, have you seen a coach where you double down on what you've done wrong the first time? Like, adaptability is the key. The way the NBA goes, you can't, you know, think of where it was, like, you know, the point guard explosion 5 years ago to 10 years ago, having the slow big men. The league changes so fast with the talent that comes in. If you're just going to have your this is the way it's got to be.
Yeah, but there's always casualties. There's always imitators where they try to jump on that bandwagon and it fails miserably. And then you have some where they go against the grain and it works for them because they're the only ones that do it. That's what made Memphis work. And now Memphis is in this situation. Maybe that's why they're taking so much time, where you have this grit and grind style. It worked for you, but you've got potential changes on the horizon. And now you got to get the right guy or the right coach with the right players so that if you change the style or you modify it, you've got to make sure it works so that you can continue being a playoff team. It's very, very delicate.
Well, it's the same thing as, you know, teams are the same way as coaches. Memphis is now the third fall of the trap. How many teams have really, with the exception of San Antonio, have done that? This is our team. We're putting the same roster in, year out. It was Chicago, Memphis, and Washington were the same teams. This is our roster.
I can make an argument about Atlanta. Atlanta was sort of in that spot, too.
Okay,
but that's going to change in about a year or two.
They have lots of changes looming ahead of them too. It's just you put the same roster. This is our team. Well, your roster is now old. You don't have those players they're now 5 years and lots more miles underneath them. So
yeah, but remember too, the teams that we're building now, they're going to be old soon. Like, there will be a time frame in about 2 or 3 years where we're like, oh yeah, the Cleveland Cavaliers, that's kind of becoming old hat. You know, it happened in Miami in 2014. You were watching that team when they were getting roasted by the Spurs and you were like, yeah, they look a little lethargic. You know, they need to make a change here.
Yeah, but even the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Here's our roster. Okay, we still got Tony Parker and, you know, Ginobili.
We got to spruce this up a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But all right, and that's going to be finishing up this episode. We'll be back, and hopefully, depending on the situation with the conference finals, once we reconvene, we'll be talking about the NBA finale, as I like to call it, the NBA finals. Are you still firm on your prediction of Cavs Warriors?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. On behalf of Adam Murphy, Nation.